Welcome everyone to Girl Gone Frugal again. Every time I say that, I kind of, if you saw me in my house, I kind of like cover my face like, haha, I'm getting frugal again, because there was a time when I was super frugal and then I fell off the wagon and I'm back on the wagon. So today's episode, I'm so geeked out about. We're going to have so much fun. I am excited to have my friend Jessica Garbarino visiting with us today. She is from the blog. She writes the blog Every Single Dollar. She has an amazing, inspirational debt freedom journey and just a lot going on. So without further ado, Jessica, did I say your last name right?
It's Garbarino.
So like, I knew it. I knew I got it wrong.
If anyone who's listening to this has ever watched Welcome Back, Kotter, and yes, there are reruns, it's Vinny Barbarino, but Garbarino instead.
You know what, though? Garbarino, the reason why that stuck in my head is because there's a shoe store, ironically enough, in Denver. Yes. So I think of that shoe store. It's a very high-end shoe store. And actually, that is a great segue into your story. So could you share a little bit about who you are, your blog, and a little bit of your personal finance story?
And just to add to that, we did find out that there's like the Best Buy of Argentina is called Garbarino.
Oh.
Why did I not get in on that? So just a little side note, little trivia for your audience. So my journey, my goodness, well, actually it claws all the way back into my 20s, because that's really – my story kind of starts there because of the issues that came about in my 20s. So I like to tell people that I was trying to live the Sex and the City lifestyle.
Hey now.
And it was kind of during the time that the show was on. So which I've been excited because I've been watching the episodes all over again on Amazon Prime. So that's been fun. I discovered that it's all on Amazon Prime.
I just love the part where she's talking to her shoes and she's like, hello, lover.
Yeah, well, you know, shoes never going to leave you, are they? You know?
No.
And if but you gain or will. Lose a little weight, they're still going to fit. So got to love your shoes. So I definitely have the shoe obsession like Carrie Bradshaw, but I was living in downtown Philadelphia. You know, I was living the life, the big corporate-y job. I did the MBA program. I did everything I was told I was supposed to do. And, I mean, I used to go and buy shoes. Like, I would go out on a lunch hour and come back with four pairs of shoes. And I didn't need four pairs of shoes, but apparently I thought I did. So at one point, though, in my journey, you know, I think sometimes we have fun in our 20s, and then we get into our 30s, and we're like, oh, I kind of have to actually be an adult now. Like, I need to start thinking about long-term, like, what's going on? I need to start growing up a little bit. So my story kind of how I decided to get out of debt kind of started in 2010. And at the time I was living in Minneapolis, I had moved from Philadelphia to Minneapolis. I was living there where most of my family lives. But I was down in Florida visiting my grandparents at the time, and because my grandfather's having some sort of knee surgery or something, so I was helping him out. And I was watching my grandmother balance her checkbook at the table. And if you knew my grandmother, like, I don't know why she had never become an accountant, because that woman was, like, meticulous. Like, if she was a penny off on her checkbook, she would flip out and review and redo everything to find that penny. So she was sitting there, you know, going through her checkbook. And I'm just watching her and I'm reflecting. And if you know anything about me or my blog or my grandparents came over to the United States in 1962 from Cuba with my mom and my aunt. And I just remembered all of the stories that they told me about having to start over at zero in their late 30s. Having to rebuild their lives. I mean, they literally came over with what they were wearing and like $100. That was it. And they didn't know how to speak any English. So, I mean, you're talking about like starting life over at like, I think she was like 39 years old. 38, 39. Yeah. So it wasn't like, okay, you know, I'm this young person. I'm at middle age now. And I just thought of all those stories, all the struggles they had gone through and all the pain and suffering they had dealt with when they were living in Cuba. And I just thought, like, and I knew, like, my finances weren't that great. Like, I knew I was just, like, not getting ahead, and I had a very good paying job. And I'm like, what is going on? And it finally just clicked to me, like, I need to, like, get this together, because these people didn't sacrifice this hard and work this hard for me to just throw it out. Like, this is stupid. This is dumb, with a capital D. So that's when I really decided that I needed to finally start attacking my finances and taking charge of what I, you know, of my life, of my financial life, because really your finances are your life. So I went home and I thought, you know what, I'm going to like figure out how much I actually have in debt. Like, let's see what's going on here. And, you know, you look at the payments you make each month and you're not necessarily looking at like what the balance number is, because it's just too scary of a number to even go there. And I pulled out all my statements. I started looking at balances and gathering it all together. And I looked at my grand total, and I had $56,000 of debt. And I was just like, whoa. I didn't think I would actually ever be able to pay all that off. Like, it seemed insurmountable. Because I think we've been taught that we're always going to have certain payments around, and we're just always going to be having debt around. Like, it's going to be something that's always
normal.
Part of your life. Yeah, it's normal, right? Because everyone has a car payment, everyone has a student loan payment, everyone has a credit card payment. That was my debt. But I was like, this is a lot of money. Like, I don't want this hanging over me for the rest of my life. So I really decided that I wanted to attack this and figure out a way to kind of wrangle this all together. So it was funny, because at the same time, my best friend and her husband were taking Financial Peace University, which is Dave Ramsey's course that he teaches, and they were taking it at their church. And my friend Angie does not get excited about finances. She stays away from, like, money and math and all of that stuff. She just doesn't even like to deal with it. So for her to be excited about finances and talking about how fun the classes were and how entertaining the video was. I said entertaining and finance. Like, are you sure you're talking about personal finance? So I thought, well, I need to check this guy out. And the classes didn't start again for another month, the next series of them. So I decided to go ahead and buy his book, Total Money Makeover. So by the time I started taking the classes, I really had gotten a head start on starting to pay off debt right in January, late January of 2010. So that's really when my whole journey kind of started, and I got really like on fire about paying off debt and just being done with it completely. And I was really on track to get this paid off in 2 years. I mean, by the end of the year, I had already paid off $26,000 of debt of the 56. So like I was, like I said, I was scraping every dollar I could. I was working part-time in the evenings. So I was just hustling as much as I could, right, to get every dollar I could. And then, of course, you know, all best laid plans get totally thrown up in the air when life decides to intersect. So in 2011, my grandparents, those same grandparents I had talked about, started having some health issues. My grandfather had had a total knee replacement at this point, and he was taking a very long time to recover. And my grandmother started having daily anxiety attacks. So we had been kind of round robining my mom and my aunt and I to kind of go down and stay with them as we could. And then I just decided to move down there to, you know, take care of them while I was still working contract for my old company in Minneapolis. Well, those hours contracting had dried up, and basically they didn't need me anymore. So by May of that year, I'm unemployed. I have no money coming in. South Florida is still recovering from the Great Recession that we had in 2008, 2009, because everything recovered a lot slower in South Florida. So I wasn't able to find even any contract work till about October. So in between May and October, I'm trying to hold on to every penny that I've got. I'm paying minimum payments on things.
I finally decide that I have to stop paying on my condo back in Minneapolis because I need that money to pay for my car because I was still paying off my car at the time. And
I had no idea about all of this. Like,
yeah, right. So I'm like sitting in the middle of trying to caretake for two older people, right, who are very Cuban and very Latin in nature. So they're very, you know, they can be very demanding and they have certain ideas of how things are supposed to go. I have no work coming in. I'm trying to work with recruiting agencies down here. I'm basically in the process of losing my home, which anybody who's gone through foreclosure knows how annoying all those phone calls and the mail that you receive from them is. And that year at Thanksgiving, I had landed work by Thanksgiving, but I was so far behind on my condo that there was just no way I was going to catch up. I didn't have the money to catch it up at that point. I was like 6 months behind at that point. So Thanksgiving weekend was a real treat because my aunt had to fly in from Oregon to take care of my grandparents while I flew up to Minnesota, basically packed up my condo and put it in a storage unit, and then came back down. That's a real fun way to spend your Thanksgiving weekend. I had already driven
And that's your birthday week, too.
Yeah, and then my birthday weekend, right? So yay me, happy birthday. Happy 34th that year. So it was crazy. So by the new year, by 2012, I had basically kind of, okay, everything's going well because now I've got my job going. Unfortunately, like I said, the foreclosure went through. My house, my condo, this is really crazy. This will show you how crazy 2005 was to purchase a home. I purchased it for $109,500, 100% financing because, you know, that's how we did it back in 2005.
Oh, yeah.
And it sold at the sheriff's sale, I think, for either $30,000 or $35,000.
What?
Yeah, it was, I lost like 70% value on that. So it wasn't like I could have even short sailed the house. Like, it was just, nobody was buying anything. Nobody. Because I'm sure the bank wouldn't have even approved it at that point. And honestly, I got some counsel from some realtors. And they said, honestly, there's not a lot of realtors that are going to take on a home that's worth below $100,000. It's not worth their time.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, well, I got to let it go. Very, very frozen. But I had to let it go. In fact, I've looked at, you know, I go back and I look at that condo, and I look to see what other condos in that building have sold for. I think the latest one sold for maybe $85,000, so it's still not even back up to what I purchased it for. So,
wow.
So we're in the middle of 2012, and at that point, we had gotten home health care in to help with my grandparents. By the middle of 2012, I actually moved out of their house into my own place because I just needed it for my own sanity. And basically, for the next 2 years, I didn't incur any additional debt, but I didn't really go into, like, hardcore paying off mode. I think I was so burned out from the foreclosure, the loss of the job, caretaking, which is a big undertaking for anyone who's done it, that I just kind of skated for the next 2 years. I just kind of, every so often I'd throw some extra money at the debt, but I was kind of like, you know, not going to go crazy over it. And then I had a friend in a Facebook group who, he's very motivational. He's very all about the hustle and reaching your dreams. And he's in one of my Facebook groups, and he posted a challenge, says, what do you want to do in the next 5 years? And post a picture of your sign saying what you want to do. And I'm like, well, what do I want to do in the next 5 years? And I'm like, of course, number one, like, let's be done with this. Let's get rid of the debt. So in August of 2014, I really restarted my hustle to get that money paid off. And March of 2015, I finished, finally.
Yay!
I paid off $56,000. At that point, I was 100% debt-free, and I still am to this day. So I'm coming up on 2 years in March. So yes, it definitely was a journey to get that debt paid off in a lot of different ways. So, you know, it was mentally exhausting, emotionally exhausting, but I'm glad I pushed through and actually reached the finish line.
You know, it's really interesting to me that you talked about that kind of hiatus, that pause that you went through. I've recently come to the realization that the last 2 years of, you know, just me, you know, I quit my job in 2014, at the end of 2014, as you know, and you know, started kind of working for myself, and I traveled, and I realized that sometimes people, like, there's so much that you're dealing with, like, that there's a point where you just can't, the energy that you need to continue on certain things is just not there.
Right. And, absolutely. You burn out.
And I think, yeah, you're just completely burnt out. And I was so burnt out from, you know, helping my mom, and I'm blessed that I was able to do it, but it takes energy to do that, as you know. Dealing with all this, you know, I worked with international students, so I had hundreds, not like tens, hundreds of people to whom I was accountable to make sure that they understood things about being in the United States legally, that they got the paperwork. I mean, it was just a lot. And then I was trying to manage my own life. It was just, there's a point where it's just too much, right?
Right.
And
absolutely.
My hair fell out, like I gained weight. It was just a lot. So when you're talking about your journey and talking about that time period and you're reflecting on it, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like badly that you took that time off, or do you feel like that you just, there was only so much you can do and you have to forgive yourself, you have to be loving of yourself enough to be like, this is where I'm at. And when you reboot it and you're like, let's do this, was it kind of like, let's get her done or it's never going to happen, or like, so just kind of talk about that process.
Yeah, I think, so I tend to be someone who kicks myself after I don't accomplish what I want to in the time period. You know, I'm very goal driven. I'm very achievement oriented. And I did beat myself up for a while on that. But, you know, I've had enough space and time past that to realize that I just didn't have the emotional energy anymore. And I think sometimes, and especially in our culture, people tend to be very unforgiving about that. Like, there's so much celebratory of, oh, I paid off this much money in like 10 months or, you know, whatever. And that's great. Like, I love it when people have those kind of stories because it really energizes people. But what I like to show with my story is, okay, here's what can happen in reality. This is what happens, because life will happen and you have to give yourself grace. So if nothing else, the process taught me patience. It taught me to persevere, and it taught me completion, because I am a person, I have a personality where I tend to start up a lot of things and I never finish completely. So the bigger accomplishment for me was that I actually finished it rather than the time period. So for me, I could overlook that, you know, demotivation time as just getting myself kind of remotivated again. And I can kind of overlook that now. And like I said, I've learned to give myself a lot more grace about it because I actually finished what I had set out to do. So it took me some time to get there, but I think it also helps. Like I said, with my story, I hope it shows people that, like, you don't have to do this perfectly. I tend to be a planner, and I want things to work exactly the way I plan it out. And as we all know, that's not how life works out. And it will change course in an instant. And I think if anything, also it taught me to kind of go with the flow, because you have to.
You know, it's funny, not funny, haha, but I read a lot of personal finance blogs. I've read, you know, over the years, just all types of stories. I love them. I'm still very geeked out about what everyone's doing. But one of the reasons why your story resonates so much with me is we're both single women. Mm-hmm. We both have been in a situation where we've had to help people in our family, maybe financially or just in a way that is what in the U.S. is considered a little bit outside of the norm. I would say with African-American families, actually the statistic is 51% of women like myself will be in the situation that I found myself in. So it's actually a really high percentage of people who are helping others. And I find myself sometimes really longing for stories where you're not coupled up. You're it's just you. It's just scrappy little you trying to make this happen. And I think that we get this mindset that you have, like, I want to have a husband, and but he's not here yet. And so these are things that I have to have managed now. And I want you to talk about, you know, being a single person, being a single woman, working on this, and some of the tools that you used or some of the people that you connected with to kind of help support you. Because when you're in a couple, you typically, hopefully, your significant other is helping you with the process if they're not hindering you, which can be the case for some people. You know what I mean? So how did you keep yourself motivated when you had all these headwinds at you?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like I said, I had done the Dave Ramsey program, and while I love a lot of his principles, I think part of the thing that he was lacking in his program, and his staff will probably attest to this when I've talked to them, is that, you know, they definitely cater more to, a you know, couples with families and, you know, with children and everything. So for me, that's primarily the reason I started Every Single Dollar, because I thought there's got to be some resource out there for singles out there, because I didn't find it when I was going through my process. So for me, it had to be a lot more self-motivation, because I had goals and I had dreams of things that I wanted to do and accomplish. I wanted to travel. You and I both love traveling. You know, there was, you know, I wanted to be able to do that. I think part of it too is that I didn't want to have that worry of my money. It's funny because back in 2008, I actually lost my job. You know, during the crash when the people were losing their jobs, I unfortunately lost my job in March of 2008. And I panicked because I had gotten like 8 weeks of severance, which, you know, being taxed at the supplemental rate is really like way less than 8 weeks. And I went into panic mode. And I remember back then thinking, I got to make sure I keep current on my credit cards. I got to make sure, not even thinking like, hey, make sure like your lights are on, your food, you know, you're getting food, you're paying your rent, you know, like the basics. So I had this very distorted view, but I also had this huge panic about, oh my gosh, I have all this other stuff that I have to make sure that I cover my debt. Because I think at the time, I think when I first started my debt-free journey, I was probably making at least $1,000 a month in debt payments between car, my student loans, and my credit. I had like 4 or 5 credit cards that I was paying on. And that all had balances that were close to being maxed out, because my credit cards were about $14,000 or so. So I was in panic mode. So I think what really drove me to get out of debt was I didn't want to have that feeling ever again. That feeling of like desperation, because I'll tell you, when I went out job hunting, I was pretty much like, I'll take anything. You know, I don't even care what it is, you know, and within my field. Whereas if I would have had an emergency fund, if I would have had no debt, you know, you have a lot lower expenses that you're dealing with during the month, I would have been able to take my time, and you make better decisions from a place of calm than you do from a place of panic. So I think that was my big driving force. The other thing is I'm a spreadsheet nut. So of course I like to track my results, and I was tracking my progress. You know, when I was knocking another one out, I was super excited, and I would post it on Facebook. So, you know, social media helped me to keep accountable, to like show other people what I was doing at the same time. I mean, I didn't have any sort of a page or anything. I was just posting it on my own profile, which is great to go back now on TimeHop, because I can see where I was at different points. I had a point during my debt-free journey where one of my credit cards, and this was during the credit crunch in 2008-2009, just arbitrarily decided to raise my rate from 14 to 28%. Ooh. I had been on time, you know, but they just decided. And I'm like, screw you. I have been a customer for over 10 years. That's it. Like, I couldn't pay that one off fast enough because I was just so – I got angry. There were different points, too, within my journey where I just got angry at things. Like, I was so mad. You know, I looked over my spending habits in my 20s, and I got ticked off at myself for some of the stupid
stupid things that I mean, I financed a TV, okay? I financed a TV in 2005 when flat screens were just coming out, and I think it was like $1,400. You can probably pick up the same one nowadays for like $600.
Was that a 50-inch TV?
No, that was 42-inch.
That was smaller. Oh, my Lord.
But that's what they were going for back then at Best Buy. It was the first thing I paid off. And I was like, never again will I do that, you know? I'm sure the hundreds of pairs of shoes in my closet were somehow gathering interest on my credit cards because I'm sure I paid them with a credit card. I mean, it just and a lot of it I don't even know what I bought with the credit cards. I couldn't even tell you. Just life. Just not paying attention.
I have a question. So,
sure.
What I have a lot of questions, actually, but I think the first thing I want to talk about is what were the actual things that you did to, you said you had a side hustle, like a side job, but what were the things that you were doing? How were you digging deep and like what money were you finding to put on this debt? What were you doing?
So I definitely always tell people I started with a budget. And the funny thing is I was great for creating budgets. I just wasn't following through on them. It's like people create diet plans and then never follow through with like eating, you know, eating well, like are their eating plans or their exercise plans. But I was so committed at that point to finally follow through. And I think that's the main crux. Like I'm an accountant. I make budgets all day long. But if you don't follow through with it, it doesn't mean anything. But I was, again, I had so much fire in my belly that so I started plotting that out. I found a bunch of, I had a stock purchase plan, not part of my 401k plan, but like, you know, you could purchase stock from your company. So it was a single stock. I'm thinking, okay, who knows what's going to happen with this company? And I got laid off from it. And I'm like, they weren't looking that great anyway financially at that point. So I sold the stock that I had, the single stock that I had in the company. So that was like an extra like $1,000 I had to throw on my debt. So then I was teaching part-time at night. You know, I had this great MBA that I spent all this money on, and I thought, well, might as well start putting it to work in the evenings as my side hustle. So I taught at a career college at night for several years. So all of that extra money was going against my debt. I don't think I sold anything, but I definitely, like, cut out going to eat out. Did very, you know, cheap entertainment. I'd go to like matinee movies. I didn't travel at all. My friends were going on all these great trips and I'm like, sorry, I'm not going. And that's tough, as you know, as a single person, because a lot of your social life involves other people. And a lot of times those people want to spend money. So paying off the debt as a single person can be very isolating in some ways. You have to get creative about, having entertainment and a social life in a more economical way. So those were kind of my primary things. And again, also putting it on social media. That was a great way for motivation because people were cheering me on when I would pay off another debt. So it helped for a lot of accountability because people were seeing my journey and they were really excited for me. So I think all of those things kind of combined were really super helpful in being really focused to pay off the debt.
Were you doing like the snowflake, the snowball, the like what like walk us through each month when you're looking at your budget? Like, were you like, okay, this month I have an extra $5, that's all I've got, I'm going to throw it on the number one bill? Or so what were some of the logistics of it?
Yeah, I definitely did. I did the snowball method, and I know people have differing opinions. The snowball method is where you list your debts from smallest balances to largest balances. You don't care about the interest rates, and you start paying them off that way. You know, you attack the smallest one. And I will tell you from experience that that actually provided the most motivation for me because I needed some, like, quick wins at the beginning to kind of show myself that this was actually going to work and that it was actually possible for me to pay it off. So for me, I needed the psychology of the debt snowball method to help me through that process. So, what's interesting, though, too, what you talked about extra money in your budget, when I actually started doing the budget and, you know, doing minimum payments on all the debts except the smallest one, I could not believe how much money I could find in my budget.
I don't think people realize how much money they're wasting on either extra things that they're spending money on or money that's just falling between their fingers because they're not paying attention. I mean, it was crazy. I felt like I got a raise because I found extra money. I was like, woohoo! I didn't even know this existed. So it was motivating just in itself to do the budgeting, to realize I had all this extra money that I could now attack these debts with.
Do you think that credit cards in particular, not necessarily credit, but do you think that credit cards are a tool that everyone should use?
I don't advocate using them at all, actually. I am probably one of the most anti-credit card. For me, it's like financial heroin because it's my drug. It's what fuels my spending because there's such a disconnect from what money you actually have versus what you have available on the credit card. So what I like to teach is to not even use them at all. And I cut my – now I have debit cards. I do use a debit card attached to my checking account, but I have not used a credit card in 6 years. In fact, I cut them up. I've got a picture of my cut-up credit cards, and I closed all of my accounts because I had to draw the line in the sand for myself to never use them again. I'm sure there's people who can say that they use them responsibly, and I'll let them be the judge of that. I just know that even using a credit card, that adds a whole other layer of juggling, of managing your finances that I just don't want to have to do. I'm trying to keep things as simple as possible and as streamlined as possible, so I just work from the cash I've got in my bank account, and it's worked for me for the last 6 years.
It's so funny because you calling it financial heroin, for me, credit cards are not a tool that I should ever use. I'm responsible with many things. It is, I don't know what it is. I've read other personal finance bloggers who've found themselves going down, like they've paid off all this debt and then all of a sudden they have this money, quote unquote money available to them. Mm-hmm. And then they start sliding back into habits. And I it's funny because I think that we've been taught this notion that you must have credit cards in order to have the life that you love. And I want to ask you, like, is that the case? You haven't used them for 6 years. How are you affording the things that you do? You travel. I know that you have a lovely home. So what are you doing in order to – excuse me, I just burped. That's great. I'll edit that out. Maybe I'll just keep it in there because it's really funny.
Keeping it real.
Hey, I'm human. So what are you doing? So for the person who's like, no, I must have a credit card, but they can't, it's hard for them to manage. What are you doing to manage your financial life without one?
Well,
you said you have the cash, but you know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting because there was actually an article, and I don't remember if it was in Time or in Newsweek, where they backed up the claim about how you actually do spend more money if you have a credit card. There's like, you spend like 20 or 30% more with credit cards than you would with even a debit card or with cash. So there is some scientific proof behind it that people generally, now I know that there are some people that may manage it very well, but in general, the population spends more. And that's not my purpose. I don't want to spend more on haphazard stuff. I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt. But for me, so people ask me, and I've had no credit in 2 years. So I get a lot of questions too about credit scores and my credit and all that, which I find very interesting. I love it when people give opinions about it, but they've never actually been through it themselves. So I like to be that resource if people want to ask me questions about it. I've traveled internationally without a credit card. I've been to several countries without a credit card. I've used my debit card. I just call my bank ahead of time, let them know so they know there's going to be some strange-looking charges on my debit card, but they're actually pretty good. I have a credit union that's very vigilant, and I know them all when I walk in the door. They call me the debt-free woman when I walk in.
Aww.
Which is funny. Yeah, they love me there. I guess what I am with my money is I'm more intentional and I'm not as impulsive as I used to be. I think we run into this mentality that we need to have everything now and that we need all of this stuff, and we don't. So even in my times where I was like close to having no money, I realized I really had a lot more than I really did. And I think, again, I think people run into this trap of thinking that they need more when actually they can probably do well with a lot less. I've become a lot more intentional about my savings. So I have a very healthy emergency fund now. In addition to an emergency fund, I also have another savings account where I just have kind of slush funds for things like car repairs, things that I know that are going to come up. So it's being mindful and resourceful ahead of time. If you don't have money in your budget for those things and all of that, all of what I'm talking about, that's when you may need to maybe pick up a second job so you have that comfort cushion, at, you know, built up at some point. You know, I've been able to rent an apartment with not having any credit balances and not using credit in the last 6 years. I've rented cars. I wrote a whole blog on that of who is more debit card friendly than others. Because there are differences in their policies. I've flown on airplanes. I've done pretty much anything that anyone else has done with a credit card. I've just learned different ways how to manage around that. And knowing that I'm not racking up a balance and having that anxiety is very freeing for me. And I would just rather not even go down that rabbit hole again.
For someone who is at the beginning of their journey, what would you say to them about the process?
I think it can be very overwhelming because I know what that felt like. I felt very overwhelmed at the beginning. Like it was something that I wasn't going to be able to conquer. It was a lot of information at once. And I tend to be a person that I want to know it all and do it all at once, right? I don't have patience for it. I just want it done and one and done. So I think allowing yourself time to learn, allowing yourself patience, if you're getting in a debt payoff process, you will learn all kinds of patience through that process. You need to take it one day at a time. And I think one thing that may surprise people when they get through their debt journey and even afterward is that you don't really change your habits a whole lot after you get out of your debt paying process. So the good thing about my debt process taking so long to take was that I was able to ingrain a lot of behaviors that have lasted beyond paying off the debt. Because it's like weight loss, right? Once you hit the weight loss goal, you still have to maintain that weight, you know, afterward. So you can't go back to the way you were eating before and the way you were living your life before. The same thing is with the money. So I don't go and buy 4 pairs of shoes at any one time. In fact, my shoe closet is probably under 30 pairs now. And if you knew me before, I had over 100 pairs. So I've just gotten rid of things because I know I don't use them anymore. So I think part of it is learning that what you're doing through this whole money journey is you're building new habits that are going to be part of your life forever. And I think if you look at it that way and look at it as an ongoing journey rather than I'm going to hit this milestone and then like streamers and balloons and like, you know, puppy dogs and gold at the end of the rainbow is going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It's an ongoing, it's just another milestone in your financial journey. It's just one more kind of, it's a defining moment, but it's not the end all be all because you still have to live life after paying the debt off.
What was it like when you finally paid that debt, that last day, was it kind of anticlimactic? I can't get the word out. You know what I'm trying to say.
Anticlimactic, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. It was. It was March 5th of 2015. I still have the date. I paid, and because I was by myself in my home, and it was payday that day, and I basically clicked pay on my student. It was my student loan. It was my last payment that I made. And I just sat there and I'm like, all right, I paid it off. Like, okay. But then what really, again, helped me to really celebrate it and where I really felt it emotionally is I posted a picture of myself with, I had held a little sign up saying like 56K paid off, and I listed all the debts that I had paid off. I actually tweeted it and tagged Dave Ramsey, who retweeted it out, which was great. I was excited about that. Yeah. But I put it on Facebook so all my family and friends could see it. And the response that I got was so overwhelming. I remember reading through them and just crying. I was so moved by how excited everyone was for me and talking to my family and my friends. And it was just, it was a little anticlimactic, but where it really hit was the following month when I didn't have to make that huge payment to my student loan, and I realized I didn't have that payment anymore. And I'm like, all right, like, what do I do with this now? It's almost like deer in the headlights. Like, what do I do now? Because you've been in this mode for so long, right? And now you have to put that money somewhere else. So that's when I started building my emergency fund. But it is a little anticlimactic at first, but once it set in, it was really exciting. It was really exciting.
So listeners, honestly, Jessica and I could talk forever. We had some funny off the record comments and commentary. You're going to definitely have to come back and virtually, because we're on the phone, for another episode, because I feel like there are so many things that we could talk about in terms of finances, in terms of business focus and professional focus. I know that you've got some things in the works, but we'll leave that for another episode. And for the listeners who'd like to find your blog, follow you on social media, could you please share that information?
Sure. My website is everysingledollar.com. I have a Facebook page, Every Single Dollar. You can find me also on Twitter at Jess Garbarino, so G-A-R-B-A-R-I-N-O. And I'm also at Jessica Garbarino on Instagram. Those are kind of the three places I live right now on social media. So come to the website or visit me on social media.
Oh, and you know what? I've just thought of a question that I think I might start asking everyone. What was the smallest amount that you paid on a debt repayment? Like I just spoke with Michelle from Fit is the New Poor. And she told me that she paid an extra 69 cents on a bill and was like, this is the best thing ever, because she was taking action. So I think I want to start asking people, what's the smallest amount you've paid on a bill, and how did it make you feel?
Wow. It's been so long since I was paying on it. I mean, honestly, I'm really one of these like all or nothing people. So I either kind of like go big or go home. I would never pay like a small, like I'd make sure I had a big amount to throw on it, because I needed to feel like it may have been like an extra $50. And that's only, again, because I'm just one of those people where I need to see a lot of progress to feel like it was worth my time and energy. Not that 69 cents isn't a bad amount to put on any debt, but I think maybe $50 may have been the smallest. I mean, I think at one point my largest was like several thousand, but it was definitely probably in like the $50 range.
All right, folks, so you've just heard there's been a range for smallest payment, 69 cents to 50. But you know what the commonality is? Both were action-based actions, basically. So you have a dollar available, you put the dollar down. You have 50, you throw it down, as long as you're taking action. And I think that's part of the reason why I'm going to start asking that, because it doesn't really matter. It's action versus lack of action. So with that being said, I'm so happy that you were here. I am actually about to go on, I think, what I would call a date.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think it's a date. I met this guy at the most random place. I'll tell you offline. But
We may have to have an interview about that one.
this is why you have niche project listeners, because you get excuses to meet people in random places.
Yes.
So.
Yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do.